You're listening to the afternoon show on CBC Radio 1. Well, Bob Cull wanted to be alone, really alone. The 55-year-old UBC PhD student wanted to explore solitude. So he packed up his things and headed for a remote island off the coast of Chile, about 2,700 kilometers south of Santiago. He spent more than a year alone on the island, and he survived the wind and the rain and sometimes freezing temperatures. But he says the biggest tests he faced were psychological and emotional. Bob Cull joined me in the studio earlier, and I began our conversation by asking him why he decided to do this.
It's been on the back burner for 25 years since I did a three-month retreat here in BC a long time ago, and some wonderful inner transformations happened, and I thought at that point it'd be great to spend a year someday. And I did a lot of other things in between, and it just kept back there. And finally I was traveling through southern Chile years ago, about 6 years ago, I guess, and was deciding to come back to go to graduate school. And when I came through the southern part of Chile, through the island archipelago there on the ferry, I just fell in love with it. And I thought, oh, this could be a place I could come and spend a year and not see anybody at all, because there's just nobody down there. It's wonderful.
What is it you were trying to accomplish? This was your PhD thesis, or a part of it.
Yeah. I started undergraduate at 40. I wiped out of my motorcycle and lost a leg. And starting late, I had a different perspective. And when I came out, I did undergraduate degrees in psychology and biology. And I came out and I felt totally disconnected from myself and from the academic process, that I as a person and my own inner searches and desires to understand myself and the world had no place in the university. And so coming back to graduate school was trying to integrate the personal into the academic and use academia as a context for personal search.
Tell me about this island. What was the island like?
Very dense, very small, very dense, and extremely windy and rainy. It's rainforest. At sea level, it's rainforest. As soon as you go up a couple of hundred feet up any hillsides, it turns almost to bare rock. But the island itself was only 200 meters by 300, so it was really small. I crossed it once, mostly on hands and knees. It was so thick. It took me an hour and a half to go 200 meters. It was just incredibly thick.
This was not an exercise in survival or anything. You took some equipment with you.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you take?
I took everything. Other retreats I've done have been really low-tech, a piece of plastic, a canoe and a fishing rod. This time, because the environment is so extreme, I took solar panels, because in the winter I needed... To start with, part of my agreement with the university is that I would have a satellite telephone to call for emergencies. And that was also my agreement with friends and family, is that if push came to shove, I could call for help. And given that, then I needed a source of electricity, and so I had to have solar panels.
Right.
And then I decided also have an electric light, a small electric light for night, and I had a laptop. So I didn't use the satellite phone to talk to anybody, but I did send out an email once a month that I'm alive, I'm okay.
So you didn't hear another voice for how long?
A year. Well, the national parks down there came once. I didn't want them to, but they came. I think they wanted to see what this insane gringo was doing down there, and if I'd built something to survive the winter. So they came for a couple hours one day, but other than that, it was a year and a couple of weeks.
What did you learn?
Whoa. That's a... I guess one of the things I learned is I can't answer that question. I went to find an answer, you know, that I could bring back and share with everybody and that would make it all worthwhile. And part of the huge frustration of the first months there was the answer wasn't coming. And not only did I feel frustrated on a personal level, but as an academic, there was this sense of, wait, I've spent all this time and money and had this support, and I'm not getting any answers.
But what kind of answer were you expecting, really?
I was expecting, you know, it's kind of shameful to say it and makes me a little, shamefaced, but I went to get enlightened to come back with the message, you know. And I found out that I don't even know what enlightenment is. And what I found out more, I think, is that I went to get something, and that very desire to get something over and over got in the way of like, surrendering myself to the process of being alive. There were times of just incredible joy, just a sense of belonging to the universe, and that everything around me was alive. I was vibrantly alive, filled with spirit, wonder. And there were other times of real darkness and pain and anxiety and fear and anger and frustration. And it's not like all the anger and frustration came first and then I go, oh, okay, now I'm fixed. It wasn't that way. These states of mind and emotion cycled through during the whole time I was there. And it opened up more as time went on. There was a sense of opening out and more importantly, an acceptance of all these things, a stronger acceptance. Oh, this is all part of what it means to be alive as a human being.
What was the bleakest time you had?
I think the toughest, after about 6 weeks, I woke up. It had been just an incredibly stormy night, just ferocious. The water was running under my shelter, and it was raining and blowing. It was just water everywhere, incredible winds, and they shifted to an unusual direction and just pounded straight into where I was. I was still living in the tent. I was building the shelter. And I hadn't taken time yet to clear the beach of rocks to pull my inflatable boat up because I was busy building the shelter. And I woke up and the boat was upside down and both outboard motors were drowned in salt water. And I was on this little tiny island. I hadn't really seen the sun hardly at all for 6 weeks. A couple of my propane tanks were somewhere else a mile away. I didn't have any firewood in yet. And I thought, I'm stuck on this little tiny island with no way of exploring my world here. That was a dark moment, and I didn't have any idea what to do, you know, and I just started one step at a time. I went out and looked, put on chest waders, went and looked, and managed to get the motors off and flipped the boat, and I got out my manual. I had taken an outboard manual and some spare parts and tools. I'm no mechanic.
Did you
and there was a section, what do you do if your outboard motors get flooded in salt water? And I just followed it. That was just like one of those wonderful things.
Did you ever want to reach for the satellite phone and say, come on and get me?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty stubborn. I used the phone more than I had expected. I called for medical assistance from my friend who's a nurse. I had to pull a tooth at one point, and I fell and really buggered up the rotator cuff muscles in both shoulders. And I called for some technical assistance on the motors a couple of times. And then I discovered that I was actually using the phone to escape from spiritual and emotional difficulties. And then I just gave up using it. I used it just once a month after that to check in. Because that's the power of solitude, is there aren't very many places to escape to. You need to face up to what's going on. And it's frightening, but it's incredibly powerful.
Bob, thanks very much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Bob Cull is a PhD student at UBC, and he spoke with me in the studio earlier on.